Dr. Amalia Gonyas-Malka. Welcome to Womanity, Woman in Unity, the show that celebrates prominent and ordinary African women's milestone achievements in their struggles for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, democracy, racism, socioeconomic class division, and gender-based violence. Joining us on the line today is Ms. Joan Marie Louise Fubbs, who is a Member of Parliament, currently serving as Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Trade and Industry, a role that she has held since 2004. On the academic side, she holds a BA Honours in Clinical Psychology from the University of South Africa, an MSc in Development from the University of Witwatersrand, and a postgraduate degree in Economic Principles from London University. Additionally, she is the founder and current chairperson of the Center for Education in Economics and Finance Africa. Welcome to the show, Ms. Fubbs.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me. It really is a great honor.
Ms. Fubbs, you head up a very important portfolio in South Africa, that being trade and industry. Can you please tell us a little bit more about the committee and the portfolio that you head?
Yes, thank you very much for giving me the opportunity. You know, the main goal of trade and industry is, in fact, the acceleration of employment through reindustrialization and trade, but strategic trade, trade that is, in fact, informed by industrialization, small business development, and other areas such as entrepreneurship and so on, indeed even services. So in the past, trade guided everything. Now we see the work we do in our own country as guiding the direction of who we will trade with and how we will trade with them. And our priority now is Africa, and we have an intra-African trading priority, regional industrialization, and complementary activities in Africa.
And that's quite a change, because in the past, a lot of our trade was outside of the parameters of the continent.
Very much so. I think South Africans didn't really see themselves as Africans. You know, I know that sounds quite ironic. If you look at your trade in those days, 30 years ago and even 20 years ago, it reflected a trade outside of Africa. And there were many reasons for that. The infrastructure, etc., which is why we have the presidential flagship programs of infrastructure and so on, to ensure that trading within our own continent and brothers and sisters becomes a lot easier. But of course, the other aspect is that we're also, in the last 10 years in particular, emphasizing the nature of broad-based black economic empowerment. And that is, it resonates very much within the African continent. So our trade, you can see, works very well. The Minister of Trade and Industry, his counterparts, the officials, the counterparts across Africa, have a clear understanding that we need ourselves to raise, upgrade, and develop Africa. We can get help from others, but if we don't help each other, we're not going to succeed. It won't be a sustainable plan, because Africans know their continent better than others.
Can you tell us a little bit more in terms of what interventions are in place to make trade easier?
Well, more recently, we established the Africa Trade Investment. It has its own DDG with a direct focus on investment in Africa itself. And prior to that, it was preceded by, of course, the Investment Act, which is a broad encompassing act which includes investments from all countries. But we did that first, and then we actually established this focus on Africa. The actual division is an actual entity which will assist us and all those in Africa itself wishing to become greater exporters. In fact, very recently, the minister is, I think it's in the process of establishing 3 days of training for exporters, for those who see themselves as focusing on exports in whatever it is they do. And I'm sure you know that exports aren't just what you and I see as exports, as perhaps cement, trucks, etc. They can be even services and so on. So it's a very broad approach. And they are now being trained. Prospective exporters are going to be trained in various provinces to this particular end. And I think that that's going to make a very big difference in South Africa itself. And, you know, exporting is not easy, whether it's with your next-door neighbour or further abroad. There's a lot of paperwork itself, and that many don't understand. They're coming to terms with such papers for the first time, and that often impedes what it is that they are doing itself. So I do think that that in itself will be a great help. The training, of course, your big companies and corporates have whole divisions and lawyers who have a greater understanding of this. But the export initiative is going to be far-reaching in our own country because it is going to conduct a two-way export, you know, not won't be one-sided. I mentioned earlier on that we have a principle of complementarity. The other issue is we're also in the process of working within Africa, linking up with the African Bank. So that bank will deal directly with trade. It will focus on that. And we do have people who work with trade and industry, but who also are entrepreneurs in their own right. So such people have been with the, say, Nigeria, the East and West African regions in the economic field for some time. And they will, like Ronnie and Thule, for example, be working more closely with developing this bank. Because in the final analysis, we need to fund ourselves. We can't always be relying on funding coming from outside of Africa. It's become greatly reduced in any case.
True, and it's not sustainable. And I think to have a meaningful, sustainable economy, it's one that we have to generate ourselves.
Indeed, we do.
So with the export initiative, that's one of the components, and the trade and industry umbrella is enormously large. You've spoken briefly about services, for instance. We've got products, we've got entrepreneurs. And in the current vein, one of the hopes from a radical economic transformation is about our small to medium enterprises. Are there any specific programs to help aid the small to medium enterprises, and specifically in rural areas?
Well, you know, Minister Lindiwe Zulu is now, this has got a particular ministry, a particular department. In the past, trade and industry dealt with small business, small and medium business. But now it's got a whole new dedication from a minister and a department. And she has gone out of her way in working directly with the provinces to ensure that it's not only a national, if you like, program, but that the provinces themselves assist with local governments in taking this to the people and making them aware. You know, we've got entities such as CEDA that focus on the training, for example. You've then got the smaller, development finance is made available through smaller, more micro entities, where you're not looking for billions at this stage, but you're looking at 100,000, you're looking at 50,000, just to get off the ground. You are, for example, capable of motor repairs, shall we say, of making certain components, but you need a particular piece of equipment, and you don't have the funds to outlay on this capital equipment. Now, fortunately, in the government, the economic cluster, but in particular, the trade and industry, the economic development, and the small business have a very strong relationship with each other. I think knowing that you cannot work alone, for example, even small business requires some of the grants, manufacturing grants, that DTI offer, you know, the manufacturing incentives. You may be a very small one-man band with a very small operation, but you're a manufacturer, and small business may not be offering that, but trade and industry does. On the other hand, you may find that you're working, you're doing a very good job, you're producing goods, but no matter what you do, no matter how you cut your costs, how you improve your efficiency, you're not able to compete. Why not? And ED, we've seen this coming out more and more, perhaps under the financial sector, but it operates in every sector. I mean, a few years ago, it dealt with the bread crisis. We have the Competition Commission. And you will find when very small businesses who are incredibly efficient and really working long hours with the agreement of their workers, they're not able to be competitive because big boys have taken a decision. We'll all agree to trade in this price range. Then you don't have a hope in hell. You don't have the capital to take a loss for a year or 6 months.
So how do we help small businesses to effectively compete with the big boys?
Well, on the one hand, yes, it's certainly upgrading their skills. On the other hand, it's providing within the department mentorship. And not the mentorship, perhaps the old-fashioned lot, but the kind of mentorship you pick up at the end of the telephone, where you know, for example, I've got Mr. X or Miss X as my mentor. And you're able to get in touch with such a person or unit and say, look, man, I'm having a problem here. Can you help? They may be able to help telephonically or come over to you or say, you know what? We're putting together about, you know, half a dozen of you. Please come up to Pretoria or please go down to somewhere in, you know, the Eastern Cape or the Northern Cape or wherever it is. And we'll be there for 2 days on a workshop. So you'll have someone on the spot who has that know-how and knows your particular industry or your business very well because they're working with you all the time and you're able to help them directly. But a lot of this can be done at the end of a telephone. The other way, of course, are field workers. We often think of field workers within the agricultural sector, but this can also and is occurring in the, if you like, other sectors, small business, trade and industry, but particularly small business with the co-ops, the small businesses, etc., where you do need someone on the ground, as it were, a field worker, who can just come in there and assist you.
The key takeout I'm getting from you is that there's abundance of opportunities. And more importantly, that you've got opportunities to access the experts, whether it's through mentorship, whether through its programs that are being set up from a government perspective. And there is this huge or tremendous interlinking between departments, so from a trade and industry to small business to economic development to links with African Bank to support things financially, that there is strong integration at play.
Indeed, there is. There truly are, but you may often ask yourself, so why aren't we getting anywhere? You know, if this is the case, why aren't we at the forefront? Why are we lagging behind?
Do you have answers to those questions?
Well, I do have a couple because I think we've identified this and we've realized that we do need this form of, what can I call it, mentorship, as I say, but that was a very old-fashioned word. It's more direct help at the end of a line. The other thing is knowing the biggest problem today is certain skills and sufficient capital. Now, we talk, a lot of people will say, oh, look, why are you throwing money at the job? It's not going to achieve anything. The reality is to purchase a small piece of equipment may cost at the very least $100,000. You don't have that, you see. You're a small entrepreneur. Now, we also have to, I think, brief our people. You get some very small, for example, equipment, machinery that produces certain things in India. It does it very effectively, and you can operate, if you like, from the size of a garage. Then, of course, you can get some of the larger equipment produced in Germany, Japan, probably China as well, and America, we know. And that needs huge premises. Do you see the difference?
Yes, that works now, on scale, looking at the scale of economies, looking at the scale of the facilities and
well, you can produce
businesses.
A scale of economies, as we've seen in India, very effectively from the size of a garage. But it's deciding where and where to place this. Let me give you what I'd call perhaps a simplified example. We're doing a lot of building of houses, RDP programs all over. And yet we buy our locks, we buy our nails. You can produce nails in a garage with a machine that is no bigger than a washing machine.
And that's
and
a business in itself.
That, yes. Now, if that was placed near, so if a local entrepreneur, if you were building this in Alex, you were building it in Tembisa, you follow.
Yes, of course.
The local entrepreneur would be on the spot as a start, producing it. But we've got to change our outlook. South Africans need to change the way we think. We need to realize we can be entrepreneurs. We do need some assistance. But that government needs to work with small entrepreneurs. The private sector, bigger companies need to work with the small boys so that you have a value chain which includes small entrepreneurs, co-ops, as well as medium and big boys. That can work very effectively. And in other places of the world, they've shown it to work effectively. But in South Africa, we have had a culture of corporates, you see. Now, they have their place. Make no mistake, corporates have their place, large companies. But that's been our whole culture, you see. Now, we're also going to look at the racial issue, where the majority of your population haven't been entrepreneurs and are coming into this in the last 30 years or so. So you've got to develop that culture. You've got to develop entrepreneurship. But the Afrikaner, for example, established huge co-ops, which started as small co-ops because wine farmers couldn't cope. And they got together. They established the biggest co-op in the country, you see. Now, the same happens in Spain, where they have huge manufacturers, which started off as small co-ops. In Kenya, the same thing. But why doesn't it succeed here is the question. And I'm not surprised. We've never had a culture of it. It is only recently that we're talking about broad-based black economic, you know, empowerment. Up to now, you worked for someone. You didn't work on your own. The people who worked on their own were on the roadside, you see. They weren't part of the formal economy. So it's definitely we are doing our level best in trade and industry to bring all of the medium, the bigger boys in, but to work with small business to ensure that the broad-based Black Economic Empowerment Act we passed assists them in developing and getting to a point where they can grow. You don't have to remain small for the rest of your life. You can move up, but you need to move up with knowledge. We need to have many more little groups of people who get together in commercial activities, in commercial social activities. So, for example, you have the, commercial, you have the Soweto Chamber of Commerce and this and that and the next thing. The Soweto Chamber of Commerce hasn't been going for 50 years. It's been going for about 20 years. We need many more chambers of commerce in among these small entrepreneurs. We've got a manufacturer's circle, which has found that they have really been able to assist each other. We need, if you like, small business circles, where people get together, discuss their challenges, share how they've resolved them, and then also work with government, and government working with bigger chaps, the corporates, the bigger companies, and persuading them to also work with the smaller ones in purchasing so that they have a contract, not with an outside country to purchase X, but work to raise the standard of whatever is being produced by the small entrepreneur so that they can buy it. Now, some of the bigger companies have what they call supplier, training programs, because they know now that trade and industry is one of its, I think, most important decisions and policies was localization and designation, to designate a product and say, you will only buy local here because we've got local people. And bigger people are then saying, wow, I see, this is now a law. Well, we'll have to put in a training program for our suppliers. Now, they've woken up a bit late, but the fact of the matter is that's part of human nature, waking up late. So they now decided, right, we can be part of this, and they are doing this with smaller entrepreneurs. So it can work. We've seen it work in manufacturing. We've seen it work even in mining. Mining, I believe, is certainly making some progressive steps forward. One has seen the new, sort of regulation and so on, where there's an acknowledgement that there are smaller mines here, and we need to work together so that we can extract as much as we can and add value through this manufacturing chain along the way. And every time you add value, you employ more people. That is the name of the game, adding value. So when you look for a trading partner, you look first and foremost, where can we sell our value-added goods? Europe has finally woken up to that. Australia, more recently, realizes, we need to buy value goods from them. But we do agree that there is space still for raw minerals to go out of the country, but not scrap metal. Now, a lot of small entrepreneurs were dealing in scrap metal and producing things, but they found that it was all being exported. But I must say, the Department of Economic Development through Minister Patel put the law in place, and that has cut down the percentage that you can send out. In fact, the Japanese don't allow any scrap metal to be exported. Why not? Because it takes less energy to use scrap metal than to use iron ore. So it makes sense.
Mm.
But we're waking up to this very, very late. I think the industrial parks that trade and industry have launched, relaunched, putting into areas and reestablishing them in areas where there's been a high, you know, unemployment rate, where the local economic development is running at a deficit. You put an industrial park there. You encourage some of the big boys to come in with the smaller ones, and you ensure that the goods produced are designated for the most part. And therefore, government institutions will have to purchase them. So every area that appears to have unemployment in high percentages for sure has got government departments. If it's not a police station, it's a clinic, etc. You've got them there. It's a school. They need to purchase from industrial parks the goods that are produced from there. So you then, as trade and industry is doing, it is targeted enormous funds to go into the redevelopment of these parks. Yes, they got off to a bit of a slow start, but now people realize they can work. So they're now coming in. So it's been very much government holding out a carrot before business comes in to bite the carrot.
I think those are all important programs, and thanks for shedding light in terms of the reindustrialization process, some of the strategic components between trade and small business development, how we can accelerate employment, and that the fact that there is a place for everyone in society, irrespective of how small or how large you are, and the benefits of legislation to ensure that laws are passed and to make life easier for some people and to ensure that we get the entrepreneurship. And more importantly, something that you raised was the shift in culture and mindset, which I think is something that's required in order to develop better thinking and more inclusion on what is possible.
I know that this is womanity, woman in unity. And, you know, I thought to myself, it probably sounds that we don't even include women in these programs. But
well, when we look at this, for starters, you're a woman. You are chairperson of this portfolio committee on trade and industry. So within the womanity vein, we look at this from an aspect of the position that you've attained. And if you could tell us more in terms of women's opportunities within this space and the positive legislation that's been passed. We've already spoken about Minister Zulu, who heads up the department. But if you could give us a little bit more in terms of if there are specific opportunities for women.
Well, indeed they are. In the department as a whole, it's totally 50-50. Oh, sorry, it's 49%.
So we've got 1% to go.
Which is the best department where that's concerned. Okay, so we took them to task, but what's 1% between friends? Anyway, the other thing is SAWIM, you know, the South African Woman Entrepreneurs. Now, that is going great guns. And all right, we don't have a deputy minister at the moment in trade and industry. But when there was, and one thing in particular of Elizabeth Tibeta when she was there, and later, of course, we had Messina, who's now the mayor of, you know, I think Ikoleleni. He also carried on that program. But they were often taken overseas to fairs to show off their goods. Everything from arts and crafts to very, very specialized pieces of equipment, perfumes, etc., and of course, designs. Now that all went all over. And, you know, the other one, which is probably, to me, even better, is the Technicon Girls. Now the Technicon Girls was started by Deputy Minister Tibeta when she was there. And basically, those techno girls Because I do think, first of all, given the challenges the internal within oneself that common woman face, such as lack of assertiveness, etc., etc., that you need to get to woman early when they are girls. And so to start the techno girls where they can participate at sort of 14, 15, you know, 13, 14, 15, where they need to identify projects and say, right, this is how we're going to achieve this business. And they do it themselves with, right, we need an ex, we need someone who can do the financing, and we can do, you know, you're good at that, and good at this, and good at that, and this is how we're putting that together, and to draw up your advertising, sort of the key principles, and how you're going to launch it, and draw a business plan up. Now, that's no mean achievement for
them. No, those are skills for them to start their own businesses and be successful.
You go into this and it gets somewhere. You know, that gives you a certain element of confidence. Yes, I can. Because I noticed this challenge with women in the program I run, the Center for Education and Economics and Finance, that the moment you're trying to bring in women, I said, listen, can you run your budget? You run the house. Right. Well, don't tell me you can't do this. And, you know, all of the women who finally came into the course and they felt they just couldn't cope with the maths. Guess what? They all passed the maths. Now, I can't say that for every man on the program. Now, what does it say? It says we're not, you know, the colloquial thing is, oh, we're not as stupid as we think.
It's underestimating your ability.
We underestimate our ability. And the critical question has to be, for a social psychologist, why? But we are very fortunate because a lot of men are beginning to also wake up. Because, no, I don't think you can do it on your own. I think there has to be an appreciation from the men about the value of woman. So I think that women do need to be appreciated. We are different to men, and that's what makes it all so beautiful, is the differences that we are both biologically, but it would be a mistake to think that our mental attributes are inferior to that of men.
And whilst we're on the topic, building female leadership capacity is vitally important for the future of women, not only in South Africa, but also across the continent. Do you think that South Africa is ready for a woman president?
You know, South Africa will always be ready for a woman president. And the reason I say that is because a long, long time ago, it was made very clear by Oliver Tambo that woman's place is not in the kitchen. A woman's place is in society as a whole. In fact, every kitchen should be an equality kitchen. It needs to start in their youth. And are we ready for a woman president? I think the mistake that we make always, and it's most unfortunate that we make this mistake, is that we don't look at quality. I am happy, and many women are happy to accept a woman or a man who has a certain set of qualities. And the critical thing is not to mention a name before you have said, today in South Africa, what are the challenges that face us? Identify them, try and obtain consensus, and then obtain consensus on the skills and qualities needed to address that. And you may find that in a woman, you may find that in a man. So it has to be an inclusive, we must have an inclusive society. And therefore, a consideration of the presidency includes both men and women. If a woman has the qualities we need, then fine, she should be the president. But what I don't want to see, I don't believe in pushing women for the sake of 50%, not first thing, or pushing women because, hell, it's time. I believe the critical point is, do we have a woman with these qualities? If we do, then fine. But don't put the cart before the horse.
Thank you for that answer. So we're looking at the needs of society with this particular type of role and the capabilities of an individual, irrespective of gender, to fulfill them. Ms. Phubbs, we are unfortunately running out of time. Can I please ask you, as we close out the show, to share a few words of inspiration or words of wisdom that you would like to pass on to young girls and women in the continent who are listening to us today?
To young people, boys and girls, men and women, I think the message I would want to give is that we need to believe that we all have a covenant with life and that our whole DNA as boys and girls, men and women, male and female, if we are going to be the final custodians of this covenant with life, we have got to work together and recognize that each of us, each gender, has something complementary to offer the other gender. And that alone, males could destroy our world. Alone, women may not achieve as well as they wish to achieve, because women are natural givers, and women will always pick up a man that is not necessarily the same as male culture. The male culture is for men to pick up men. So we need to change that and to see each other as people first. Let us work together to make South Africa a better place.
Thank you very much. We appreciate you taking time out of your day to share your insights, and particularly on the importance of trade and industry as a vital engine to drive the economy of the continent.
Well, I really must thank you. And Dr. Amalia Ganeus Malka, I'm certainly going to make a point of listening more to your program. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Phubbs. You have been listening to Womanity, Women in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance. And we have been talking to Ms. Joan Phubbs, who is a Member of Parliament and serving as the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Trade and Industry.